This episode of the Hatchcast is brought to you by Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. The Burgess Institute empowers students to learn through action by providing programs, courses, and resources to foster an entrepreneurial mindset and create new ventures. One name, one program, Limitless U. Learn more at eship.msu.edu.
Welcome to
Creativity,
Risk-Taking,
Entrepreneurship,
Community,
Innovation,
Ambition.
This is
the Hatchcast.
So welcome back to the Hatchcast. I'm Aaron Richard.
I'm Justice Keach.
I'm Brandon Weaver.
I'm Gabe Hales, and we're here in quarantine. Episode number 2 recorded in quarantine. Let's go. Let's do
Absolutely.
It. I'm excited.
So welcome back to the pandemic Hatchcast.
Well, you'll get your daily rations of entertainment.
Daily rations of entertainment just for you. Oh, that's actually a nice tag. I like that.
Put that on the web. It's all up here.
Bugsy, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself to our audience and tell us your name, rank, serial number, and what you do?
So, my name, Bugsy Sailor. Grew up in a little small town of Baraga, Michigan, but now live in Marquette. Went to Michigan State, graduated in 2006 with advertising and sociology, and have done a bunch of crazy projects since then.
You want to name a couple of those crazy projects, sir?
Straight out of graduating from state, I went on a year-long 50-state road trip. And that road trip was sponsored by Jeep. The whole idea
wow.
was to visit all 50 states within a year and stay with people I had never met. And that kind of just transpired into like project after project. I've worked at a couple of like branding and web agencies over the year. I'm really like a web developer, web designer by skill set. But I'm a full-time entrepreneur now. And yeah, living the life in the
year. How did you get right out of college, if you don't mind me asking, how did you get the sponsorship by Jeep to just go travel like that?
Yeah, so I wrote up an entire proposal and talked to my professors in the advertising department, and they were extremely supportive and encouraging. And they put me in touch with like the used car marketing team at Chrysler. And I did my little pitch. I had a PowerPoint. I did a little Photoshop mock-up of what a car could look like if we wrapped it. They were really into it, and they sent the whole thing to BBDO at Chrysler Worldwide Marketing.
Huh.
So I had a second meeting, and they were like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, it was incredible. So they gave me a car, a Jeep Compass, which was their newest model at the time.
Wow.
Fully loaded. I didn't see another one on the road for 3 months. And then
damn.
I didn't give the car back at the end of the year, but it was incredible to have their support.
But still, a whole year of that is insane.
Yeah.
And so you got it wrapped?
Yeah, I had this little, I didn't spend much time on the design, and they did it like just as is in my
wow.
document. And if I knew they were going to do that, I would have spent some more time on it. But it was cool. It was great.
So Bugsy, thank you for joining us. We're so happy to have you. I'm glad to see you again, and I'm glad to have you back on. Just for full disclosure, Bugsy ended up being with us for Innovate State last year, which was one of the most wonderful experiences. And then I dragooned him into joining us today. But one of the things that we can't ignore at this moment is the fact that we're living in the midst of something that is unprecedented, at least in living memory. And so I think, let's address the elephant in the room. That is the elephant we're living in right now.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Are we all well?
I think I'm doing well. I'm practicing social distancing.
I mean, in the UP, Bugsy.
I live a pretty socially distant life as it is. So it's not much of a stretch for me, but you know, it's weird. It's just bizarre for everyone.
What can we adopt from the Youper lifestyle that will kind of help us get through this social distancing period?
I still do this sick practice of mine where I photograph every sunrise every day, no matter what. And so people up here are still getting outside a lot. Like, I think more people are taking advantage of like going for a run, going for a hike, do it in a secluded place. It's totally cool. It's within all the guidelines of social distancing. And you know, it's important to stay healthy and to stay physically active, which improves your immune system anyhow. So get outside, you know, experience nature, go for a walk.
Love it. Yeah, it, honestly, like me, just walking outside, going on bike rides, running every day, there are so many people from my neighborhood that I never knew existed. And I guess I haven't lived at home in like 2 or 3 years, but like even just the past few days, it is almost like amazing how many people you see just everywhere, walking outside, doing stuff with their kids, whether it be in the front yard, going on walks, going on like family bike rides. Honestly, I think this is good. There's a lot of bad things that are coming out of this, but I think there are also a lot of good things, hopefully changing up habits, changing up routines for people.
Bugsy, so speaking of getting outside and like doing stuff while we're in this whole mess, do you have any like favorite camping or hiking spots in Northern Michigan?
I'm a little weak on my outdoor adventure spirit, quite frankly. So I don't do a lot of like big camping trips. I love a lot of like short road trips, day trips across the UP. One of my favorite places to visit is Whitefish Point. Up by Taquamenon Falls. And then the lake is always majestic up there. But I've got my favorites right here in Marquette that I visit all the time, especially Little Presque Isle, a few miles north of Marquette. And another favorite that I always sneak down to a few times a year is Kitchitakippi, which is this gem of this. I think it's the largest spring east of the Mississippi, something like that, natural spring. Clear as can be. You see 40 feet straight to the bottom.
Holy cow. Crazy.
It's just this beautiful green teal color. So yeah, there's a bunch of little places. I love Michigan. I love the Midwest. I love taking little day trips here and there. Yeah. I haven't left the Midwest and it's been a while now. I'm overdue for a bigger trip. Yeah.
What year did you do the 50 state trip?
That was 2006, 2007. So it'd be entirely different if you did it now. To put a little context to that, Twitter came out that year. YouTube came out that year. iPhone came out, I believe, that year as well. Yeah. So this is like just on the cusp of like all those monumental changes in technology. Facebook existed, but it didn't exist as the marketing tool that it is now.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was still old school in terms of all my press coverage was newspaper, television, radio, a lot of email communications and traditional phone calls.
What do you think entrepreneurs should be concentrating on right now in the midst of, so something that goes across every industry, what should they be thinking about right now to soften the blow of this pandemic, whether it's on the effect of their startup, the effect on their workforce? What kind of blanket recommendation do you think you might be able to offer?
Yeah, I've got a couple thoughts. So one is really my day job is I now run an online brand, but we own a retail store, Upper Peninsula Supply Company, downtown Marquette. And traditionally we're open 10 to 6, Monday through Saturday. And it's so bizarre that we're closed now. And it breaks my little plaid heart that, you know, that we're closed. But we have to, it took me a long time to get my head wrapped around it. Like I was just kind of in the wind was taken out of my sails for sure. But the more that we can look at this kind of downtime or just like limbo, whatever this phase we're in, if we can look at that as an opportunity, people will come out better on the other end. So I'm looking at opportunity. Okay, what are all the things we've wanted to do at the shop since day one that we've never done? Like there's things we've wanted to paint. You know, things like that. Well, nobody's going to be in there for weeks. So it's a great time to go in and paint or something. I could do it by myself, but bring in new products. And so I can like revisit a bunch of these things. It's like, okay, let's reset, kind of clean the slate and like, you know, really like step back. And it's a great time to do that. I'm not caught up with any of the busy work. Phone isn't ringing. You know, there's not much customer service and I don't need to man to have someone sit at the counter every day. So it's a huge opportunity. What I think in terms of business is I think of the domino effect and I think it works in both ways. So we're seeing this huge financial crisis and on top of, you know, the health epidemic. And then, you know, one person can't pay a bill and then, you know, that person can't pay their bill because they didn't get, you know, their share and it goes on and on and on. And you know, we see these huge unemployment claims. But I think the reverse can happen. It's like if you're that person at the top or if you're a person that has the means and you can give a little flexibility to, you know, your tenant or someone who owes you a favor. You know, if you could provide that, a little relief down the way goes, you know, has that reverse domino effect. Because if my landlord says, hey, we can slide on rent this month, that gives me a ton of relief because I have my own tenants where I can be like, okay, my landlord says I don't have to worry about rent. That means I can tell someone they don't have to worry about rent, and they can tell, that means maybe they can, you know,
get a meal on the table.
Yeah, meal, what their family situation is, another bill that does have to get paid. So it's the amount of flexibility that we provide each other. There's all the financial relief that's coming and who knows how much time, but I think our willingness to be flexible amongst our own communities is going to have the bigger impact.
So I think one of the interesting parts of this crisis is that, sure, it does reveal some of the worst things about humanity. And it's easy to focus on that. It's super easy to focus on that. But I think about all of the beautiful things that humanity is doing and stepping up at this moment. I'm thinking about local business leaders around here. Shout out to Travis Stoliker and to all the businesses that are hopping on the bandwagon to get food and meals to families that are most vulnerable in our area. I think that is inspiring, and it gives me great hope, and I think it gives the community great hope. What kind of role do you think business leaders and entrepreneurs have in fostering that greater good?
It took me a while. I sent out a big email to all our customers this week, and it took my head a while to just wrap around, what do I say? And this elephant in the room, I felt I had to acknowledge, you know, what's going on in the world. But it feels, for me, real right now, the business, we still need to keep the faucet on. We still need the money to come in to some degree and support what we do, and people need to make a living. But it feels really strange at this time to be promoting goods that are very non-essential. So it took me, like, how do I word that message? But it's really what's like, if you have the means to support us, we appreciate that. But it's like, I'm saying, we get it. It's like, I have to understand that we are not of essential needs right now. And I think it's, you know, as I mentioned in that email that, you know, we're community first. I mean, that's how we've always been. I'm much more community minded than anything else. It's, I want to affect the community in a positive way more than my own pocketbook. But I think having that community first mentality, the more you can make that impact. And I started thinking about, like, a dollar spent at UP Supply Co. and how far that goes, because it does support local artists and it supports our local screen printer. And we try to say yes to every donation request that comes into the shop. And then it allows us to sponsor Fresh Coast Film Festival and all these other events. So it is that trickle down effect or that domino effect, you know, it goes a long way when you keep it in the community. But I've always been, I don't even know what the original question was, Aaron. I'm just going on a rant now. But it's, you know, I've always preached a lot of positivity. You know, it's like, I try to stay upbeat and you know, send a positive message out with everything we do in the business.
I didn't realize it was muted. I just said, rant away.
So I wanted to ask, kind of going back to, it's kind of like spreading positivity, making sure you focus on a creative project, having such a project. I heard a lot about, like, the sunset. You have woken up every morning, taking a picture of sunset, the Jeep trip, creating this clothing company. Do you happen to have any tips towards entrepreneurs, towards creative, towards anybody like that, about how to get that next project off the ground? Because what I have been struggling with over the past few weeks, especially while we've literally just been sitting in our homes, is, what do I do next? What is the next thing that I focus on? Like, how do I find that next idea to go crazy about? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. It's a great question. I think one of the things that bothers me the most that I tend to see a lot is that whatever it is we're doing, if it's within a nonprofit, starting a business, a creative pursuit or artistic endeavor, I feel so many of us are waiting for permission. Yeah. It might be waiting for our parents' permission that it's okay to do this thing, or it might be waiting for a grant to come through until we start this new project, or we're not going to start this business until we have financing or a loan or whatever else. And I don't know why, but I've never done that. I'm just like, I can start, you know, depending on what the project is, you know, the scope changes, but it's there's something you can do towards whatever that project is today.
Yeah.
And I think I had to, I have fantastic parents and I love them dearly, but I think I had to seek a lot of permission when I was a teenager. And I think when I finally became an adult and I felt so free and like, I don't have to seek that permission anymore. And I love that I can just do these things whenever and however I want. And I think we forget that. So I encourage people to stop seeking permission and just, as Richard Branson always says, he has this motto called screw it, let's do it.
I'm in.
Yeah. And that's my take. But the other part of your question you were getting at is like, how do you choose that next project?
Yeah, exactly. Where you, like, I was going to say.
Energy. That's tough. I struggle with that. And one of my biggest, my own faults is that I say yes to too much and I spread myself thin, but I write down every idea. And then that way, you know, sort of when it comes back, it's like when time allows, I can revisit that list and see what kind of like floats to the top of like, you know, where my inspiration matches up at the time or skill set. But sometimes you just got to like, even if it's just blindly picking a direction, you just got to keep moving forward. You can only run in circles so much. Like you got to go in some direction, you know? So at some point you just got to pick something and go with it. What I love in all my endeavors is that everything I've done, there's always been these unpredictable little side outcomes. So it's just like by moving forward on something, these other little opportunities like generally like tend to arise out of it.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Bugsy, I had a question about Fresh Coast. I was looking into buying tickets actually. I know that that couldn't have been like an easy thing to just make and popularize. So what kind of hiccups did you experience trying to make sure that you got the word out there and that people actually came to this event? Because I'm assuming you had quite a bit of sponsorship for that event.
Yeah. Well, sponsorship is mostly local at this point, very local. We're still working on trying to get that national sponsor. But Fresh Coast Film Festival, we're going into our fifth year, a strictly documentary film festival, all walkable. Different venues, downtown Marquette. And then the theme is really outdoor lifestyle, adventure, conservation, anything within that. But really, there's three key founders. We have five board members. We really had a yes mentality. Anytime an idea came up, we're like, yeah, let's do it. So long as we have somebody who can take the lead on that idea or project. My involvement has really been through the marketing and branding of it. And I felt strongly that, you know, for this to succeed the way we want, you know, I want this to come off like as professional and polished as possible out of the gate. And I think that gave us a lot of credibility from the get-go, that we had a lot of legitimacy. So I always preach that is, you know, like the more you can come off as polished, the better. However, it's actually kind of humorous because we've had some really beautiful posters that we've hung around town in the last few years. And I want to be sensitive here because there's other nice posters in town. But I think our poster stands out so much amongst the wall of posters that I think some people have seen like, oh, that's so pretty, that it must be this external festival like coming to Marquette for the weekend rather than something that's homegrown here. Like they think it's this traveling show, but that's important to us. We want to look good. Yeah.
And did you have any problems from the get-go? Because I know that facilitating such a large event.
You know, our biggest issues have mostly been around like tech and AV stuff, like during the weekend of, and you know, we've had a couple audio issues where films were playing, the audio cut out. We were delayed at a couple showings because of the video equipment and not testing it early enough, or you know, something went haywire. One guy, there's a few years ago at one venue, one guy had to literally hold two wires together the entire time for the video to play. But he was awesome. He was an all-star volunteer. So there's stuff like that, but you know, otherwise things have gone really smooth. We're definitely a small organization. You know, we're trying to find a bigger budget, bigger sponsors and bigger speakers to bring in. So everything else is really like, how do we grow it? And just those challenges.
With an event of that size, is there a worry at this moment? I mean, I know that we are right now in March and October is feeling far, far away.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan B that's sort of rolling through your head? And I mean, I think that those kinds of logistics are going through everyone's heads at this moment. So, you know, are you thinking about a plan B or are you just like, we're going to wait and see?
We're not quite to a plan B yet. However, I'm great friends with the crew at Capital City Film Festival in Lansing. Yay. And awesome crew. Breaks my heart that they had to postpone their 10th festival. But this has been happening everywhere. The Ann Arbor Film Festival, which is one of the oldest in the country, they moved to an all digital online streaming platform.
Wow.
And I've seen some other festivals do that, and that's a great option, you know, and we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, that's, you know, what this format is sort of about. Yep. Today too. So that's an option. I mean, man, we really, you know, October seems a long ways away, but it's going to come fast and hopefully things are cleaned up. But I absolutely feel this is going to have an effect on all these events and organizations for a long time. I mean, even if the world is operating as we all hope by October, it's still affecting our planning right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because we're canceling meetings right now. So our planning is getting postponed, which means like we might not be able to grow as much this year just because we're falling behind in that process.
Sorry, I want to dovetail with that, because as entrepreneurs, it is imperative for us to be able to be nimble and to assess, de-risk, and be able to pivot when we see problems coming forward. And I find that entrepreneurs and businesses smaller businesses seem to be a little bit more nimble than, say, the federal government, because it's a giant machine. Right. Can you talk about nimbleness and how to reshape your thinking when crisis occurs?
Yeah, I've learned a lot. I think the value of being able to make a quick decision that once that decision's made, you got to stick to it and follow through. You can't backtrack. And the more you backtrack, you're just going to be right back where you started again. But I'll talk about an example from 2019 at my shop from a big organization. And I saw them make a decision so fast that it was really inspirational to me. So last summer, we called out Mountain Dew on Twitter because they associated the Upper Peninsula with Wisconsin. That was all started from within my business, within my Twitter account, and it went viral. That tweet had over 1 million impressions. Eventually, Mountain Dew said, "Okay, we're going to make an exclusive Mountain Dew bottle with an Upper Peninsula label." Unreal. I got to work with them directly on the design of the label, and I was in contact with the vice president of Mountain Dew and some of their PR people on a day-to-day basis. And they were incredible to work with. And we decided we would have a launch event from my little storefront in downtown Marquette. And this was on a Sunday, and I think the event was planning to start at 2 p.m. Normally on Sundays, we do hours like 10 to 1 in the summer. So at 11 a.m., people started to line up out the door. And I was like, wait, like these people are either crazy or we've got like an issue on our hands. I was like, the event is over 3 hours away. This is just for a limited Mountain Dew bottle. And within a couple hours, we had a line halfway around the block, all the way behind our building. And within 45 minutes, we had 400 people through the door.
Wow.
So the plan was that everybody in the door would get one free bottle of this Upper Peninsula label, and then a free t-shirt as well that had the design on it. Well, we only had 200, and 400 people showed up. And they waited in line. No, none of us knew what to expect with this whole thing. It was so new to all of us, and new for Mountain Dew and Pepsi to be working at an event like this small was hard for them, because they're used to working at scale.
Yep.
What year is it? Was this?
This was last year.
This was last year.
Oh, really?
This was last summer. Well, what happened is we got through all the bottles, and I saw the vice president of Mountain Dew and their brand manager just decide, okay. And they just snap decision. They said, we're going to take names, emails of everybody in line, and we're going to produce more of these bottles and more of these t-shirts, and we'll get them to you.
Huh. Oh, wow.
Which was no easy task. To produce those bottles again and everything else. And it took some time for sure, but I was impressed that they committed to that on the spot, and but they followed through as well. I was kind of like, well, they're really gonna, you know, stick through with this. You know, we're a pretty small dot on their radar, but they did, and they're incredible to work with the whole time. So that was a great example to me of, you know, but still, it was this positive event. You know, it was a free giveaway, but you know, like they didn't want to upset customers and their brand loyal customers. Yeah. And it's, you never know like when you're going to have to make that quick decision.
That is so the VP of Mountain Dew is there for your event.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is fantastic.
All the people I know in the UP drink so much Mountain Dew. It's got to be like one of their highest.
Yeah. There's a lot of Dew drinkers up here. Yeah. They're incredible. Like I've got nothing, but this isn't even me putting on my PR face. It's just totally authentic. They're great people. Loved working with their whole team.
So Bugsy, I have a question and it's kind of personal.
Cool.
So I made a 30-minute short film with some friends last year where we sailed from Lake St. Clair up around the Thumb and into Bay City, Michigan. And it was like a fun little like kind of documentary, kind of just whatever. Yeah. I was wondering, like, can I just go on Film Freeway and submit that? Is that?
Yeah. Film Freeway is the best. I actually don't touch the film submissions personally. Yeah. We've got someone else who touches that. So yeah, they'll see it. And I don't know if there's a way to put in a note, but tell them you talk to Bugsy. And
okay. I mean, even if not, I don't want to like put myself in. I was just wondering if it's possible.
I mean, two things. We want young filmmakers. We want students. And then the only red flag that comes up is that we might likely want a shorter version. Yeah, if you can get into the 15 to 20 minute range.
Well, Bugsy, I want to say thank you because you know how I was asking about what creative endeavor, like how to find that? You just gave me one to do for today at least. Yeah, so I appreciate it. That's amazing.
Moving. So Gabe, Justice, and Brandon, what programs are you in at State?
So I am a filmmaking major and a philosophy minor.
I'm media and information, which is like kind of film, but I'm kind of focusing in audio engineering at the moment. And then I'm also minoring in screenwriting.
Okay.
So. Then I'm business communications, and then I do the minor for entrepreneurship.
Where'd you each grow up?
I grew up in Southfield.
I grew up in Okemos, Michigan, Lansing, Michigan area. So like straight mid-Michigan, haven't really gone far.
Fenton?
Okay, yeah, right on.
Growing up in Berrega, what drew you down to State then?
So my mom actually graduated from East Lansing High School.
Oh, wow.
And my grandma used to live on Harrison.
That's where my parents grew up.
Oh, really? Yeah, between Saginaw and Lake Lansing. So I would go down, you know, several times a year, and my grandfather worked in the MSU library system for his career, and I would go visit and loved it. I kind of knew I wanted to get out of the UP and I didn't know what I wanted to study at the time, and I wanted to go to a big school. So State ended up being the only school I applied to and got in, and I mean, I wouldn't change it for the world. I had a great time and spent 5 years to get the 2 degrees. And it was great. I was familiar with East Lansing in a little bit because of my mom and my grandparents. And that just gave me a little bit of comfort, you know, to kind of like move MSU to the top of the list.
Bugsy, have you been down to the Jack Pine and saw the Indian in Manistique?
Yes, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
I'm probably overdue. I've not spent much time down there lately.
You frequent Mackinac Island?
I go every July 4th for the Mackinac Island stone skipping tournament.
Oh, nice. Beautiful. Have you ever gone to Irvana's right on Main Street? It's like a little scrimshaw shop. My aunt owns it. She lives on the island.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Irvana's Handmade Something. Yeah. This is just a plug for my aunt. So if any of you out there want to buy some pocket knives or whatever, hit up my aunt.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
Wait, I have a question. On your Jeep sponsored trip, do you have any crazy weird stories? Like, what's the weirdest thing that happens sleeping with another person in their home? I guess not sleeping with them, but like,
to be fair, this is like, like life before Airbnb, right?
This
you go on like Craigslist and find places, or how did you do that? And what was the craziest story?
The idea was people I had never met before. So that could still be a close, you know, friend of a friend, but honestly, friends of family didn't get me very far at all. So that was maybe a third of the stops. And then I stayed with a lot of people who heard about the trip through newspapers and the press.
Wow.
And I might stay with them, but then I'd maybe meet somebody in Arizona and they're like, hey, we've got cousins in Texas. And they might be, we've got friends in New Hampshire. So I ended up staying with a lot of friends and relatives of previous hosts on the trip as well. So that was kind of how the network of it happened. In terms of crazy, I left from Berrega and went counterclockwise around the country, essentially. So Minnesota ended up being my fourth state. I mean, we're talking first few weeks into the trip, really early on. So I still have no idea like what the heck this trip is going to be. You know, like I still feel very green with the whole thing. And stayed with this amazing family in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, outside of St. Paul. And married husband and wife. They had two girls who were maybe 11 and 13 at the time. And I had just spent a full week with them. They had planned out like this full itinerary. It was awesome. Wow. Did all these things. I mean, they were fantastic hosts, really generous. Had a great time, just good people. And it was our last night, and it was my last night in town. And it was actually the homecoming at the high school. So I actually drove my that Jeep. I drove in the homecoming parade.
Oh, amazing.
And then, wow. Yeah. And then we went to the homecoming football game. It was like raining and pouring. And then we got home and we had like just a late night kind of snacks or just breakfast food, like in the kitchen. And then the girls had gone to bed. I was down in the basement, like just printing directions from MapQuest.
Wow.
For the next day's drive.
Yeah.
So that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I had to be up really early that following morning to be on the Dave Ryan show, which is still on the air in Minneapolis, still a big show. I was in the basement. It was probably 11 at night or so. And the mother and wife comes down. I told her, I was like, does something just seem off to you? I was like, does something smell weird? It's like, what's going on? And she's like, I don't know. And she called the husband down and they couldn't figure it out. And he kind of checked the gas lines and things. And they decided to call 911 and they said, get out of the house. So fire truck shows up. They come in with a carbon monoxide tester and the carbon monoxide levels were through the roof.
Oh my God.
And the girls were already in bed. They said, everybody, like, get out of the house. They said another hour in the house and all five of us.
Wow.
And it was so bizarre because so we stayed up, we opened all the windows in the house to vent out the whole thing. He explained everything which was going on, which had to do with like, as a newer house, so really tightly sealed, there's a roaring fire going and then a broken furnace vent system.
Oh, so it's like the perfect trifecta.
Yeah. So you take out any one of those and this situation doesn't happen. And
yeah.
Broke this down, but then to go into the same house where you were told that you were about to die and to go try and sleep that night.
Yeah.
It was terrifying. No. So it was super bizarre. And I always felt super connected to that family, like on top of a really good week with them.
Having a near-death experience.
To cap it with that experience became like, yeah, really close with that family. They were really remarkable.
Do you still talk to that family?
A little bit. Unfortunately, the father has passed away. He had a serious bout with leukemia, but the girls are all grown up now. I mean, they're a lot older. Wow. and you know, I got to see the father several years ago when I was in Minneapolis, and like I had told this story so many times that I did I make this up in my head? Like, you know, it's like, but it was so great to hear him relive the story in his own words. And this really happened. And it was crazy. And I don't know what it was. I've made the newspaper three times on that stop. One was for the trip itself. One photo of me in the homecoming parade. And then three, this carbon monoxide story. There's printed credit of me being sent by God to save somebody's life. And but they say it's the silent killer and that it's odorless. But whatever it was, I sensed in the basement that I was like, something is off here. And I don't know if I was starting, like if it was in my head, I don't know.
Yeah. Because you do like people who have, carbon, whatever poisoning, like if people do things and then the next day they're like, I think somebody broke in, like there's stuff all over my house.
I don't remember this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so something triggered it in me and I don't know what would have happened. So they gave me all this credit, which was a bit strange, but
sponsored by Deep.
I didn't tell that my parents that story for like a month after because they were super worried.
Worried
about this trip. And
they would have been come home now.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 23 when I left.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So that was
it always a week at every stop?
No, it was. So I spent at least 5 days in every state. But some hosts, I just, depending on the schedule, all kinds of factors, you know, sometimes it was just stopover for a single night, but somewhere as long as 7 days, probably.
What was your favorite city? out of the whole country?
Ooh, city. That's not how people usually ask that question. I have a hard time. I got to stick with, I had so many good times in the Northwest. I don't know if this is a favorite city, but I think the city that surprised me the most was Boise, Idaho. Just not what I expected. And cool
what
place.
What did you expect?
Well, I guess I didn't know what to expect either.
Potatoes.
but I just had a really incredible time there, and I became a huge Boise State football fan, and it was shortly after, like, I became friends with all these Boise State students, and it was shortly after that that Boise and MSU played like a home and away football series. I think State won them both, which was awesome.
Nice.
And I got to rub it in with those friends, but it was such a good time with just fun little stories that it just goes right to the top of those memories, I guess. And what I'll say is, like, I don't care where I'm at, it's all about the people. And it doesn't, I'd rather be in the middle of Nebraska with awesome people than in Honolulu with boring people.
Yeah. Did you go to Hawaii?
Yeah,
you can't drive a Jeep to Hawaii.
How did you do that? Yeah, I flew to Hawaii from LA.
Wow. Did Jeep fly the Jeep there and everything?
No, no. But what I did is to prove that the Jeep went to all 50 states, the rear dome light of the Jeep had this little like pop out light that became like a flashlight. So I brought that to both Alaska and Hawaii because I flew to Alaska as well. So a part of the Jeep went to Hawaii and Alaska.
Is that Jeep anywhere still?
So, yeah.
Should have let you keep that.
I know. Yeah. I can't.
Or like they should have put it somewhere. Like maybe it's at the Jeep headquarters. Do you have any like information on?
I mean, I've got the VIN number still. You know, it could be looked up probably.
Carfax, man.
Yeah.
Then you sponsorship just money? Hunt down.
Somebody's driving that thing and doesn't realize that it's been
every 50 state.
Yeah. They don't know the stories.
How many miles did he put on it?
I think 26,000.
Not bad. Wow.
Yeah. That's actually less than I thought it would be.
It would probably be a lot more, but what ended up happening a lot of times I'd get to somebody's house and they would do the driving while I was in town for the week.
Oh,
cool. Because if they would just know how to get to places, and so they would, a lot of the time.
And Apple Maps wasn't a thing.
Yeah, right.
So you couldn't just plug it in and go.
So they would chauffeur me around a lot more when I was at different towns,
Bugsy, a couple of questions I have left are, as someone who has studied sociology, what about this crisis are you finding interesting? And I think interesting is one of those perilous words where you're like, it's not interesting, but from a sociological perspective, what is piquing your curiosity as we move through this pandemic?
Well, I guess the thing that comes to mind is I think a topic within sociology that's always been interesting to me is like the medicalization of society, and everything is a symptom and there's med for everything. It's the constant advertising of medications and everything else. But I think this is the balance that we're all wondering is like, what's the amount of overreaction that we're having? And it can't really be measured. And there's a great, I don't know where I read this, but it put it in perspective. And it's like, we're taking all these unprecedented actions that have not been done before. But somebody said, if this works, everything we're doing in the social distancing, we shouldn't notice. Like if we don't notice a difference, like that means that it worked. Like we don't know how many lives, whatever situations were saved by these actions. But what's also very interesting to me is because I think my biggest question, which will be in the history books for a long time, I think, is like, why? Like, why were we so eager and willing to go to this degree when we've had so many issues in the country and the world that we're just reluctant to take big historic steps on, measures on, whether that be the wealth gap in America, climate change, gun violence. There's lots and lots of issues. And I think in the most rudimentary understanding of it, my hypothesis is that because this is new, the arguments we've had over climate change or gun control, they're just old, it's old hat. Like we've been having those discussions forever. There's nothing new about it anymore. It doesn't feel urgent. It's just like an ongoing sludge fest.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like there was something about COVID that triggered us, that we responded in a way that we never have. And I don't know if that was like the perfect storm of ingredients that got us to respond in such an unprecedented way.
I think one thing that's interesting is that this invariably will teach us that we can take gigantic collective action to face many, many problems. And that this inconvenience pales in comparison when we're talking about the monumental effects that climate change will have on our economy and people's lives. If we're really worried about the economy, we kind of should be worried about climate change, and that requires big, bold action. And so maybe we should be less afraid of our own shadows and really just address the issues head on.
And it goes back to what I said earlier on with me standing there handing out Mountain Dew bottles. It's just like, make the decision and just go and do it. And I think that's what has to happen with a lot of the ongoing debates we have of like, at the end of the day, you have to take that risk and just, there's an amount of leap of faith in all of it.
Yeah. And I'm hoping this whole thing sways at least some people, but hopefully a majority in some aspect to do something like that, to realize that, oh, there is something wrong. We have the capability, like Aaron has said, I think, to do something this big. So why not just do it? Why not move forward? Why not? And maybe that'll take like putting climate change, the climate crisis into a new perspective, into a new bubble, and packing that up and shipping it out where it turns into something that is as new and as monumental as COVID has been. But I think that this puts that thought into people's minds, and hopefully once it's all clear and done, whatever that is, and of course there's going to be lasting impressions and everything like that, but it'll make it so people are like, wait a second, we can stop everything, we can do these crazy things to help others understand, to mitigate at least.
So I mean, I've listened to a couple of podcasts, including Freakonomics, and one of the things that I keep hearing is that, like, the 1918 flu epidemic, that narrative got rolled up with the end of World War I. And because they sort of happened at the same time, and because it was so antithetical to the narrative of victory in World War I, that it wasn't that great of a story to tell. That people came back from war, and you know, a third of the world's population passed because of the pandemic. Yeah. Nobody wants to tell that story, but we will tell about World War I. So it's interesting how narrative works in that situation.
I think that with like what this is going to do to our economy, it might spark that clean energy sector, just because it could be a way for us to get out of that dip. That it's inevitable, it's going to happen, but it's a new sector that we can create jobs with, and it might spark, you know, more money going into that, just as a new way to get out of it.
Hopefully.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
Oh, I don't know, all kinds of things.
Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I'll plug things left and right. Freshman's Film Festival.
Yeah. I think we'll be there.
I will roll out the red carpet, so to speak, and you know, I love seeing people make the trip, and
beautiful.
You know, it's
and I'll submit that film. Yeah. So hopefully we'll
be there. Tickets online.
They're actually kind of hidden right now, but tickets.
I found them on the website.
Yeah, we still have the early bird pricing available now. So
you heard it here first.
Yep.
All right.
Oh, I love visiting with students. I love keeping I love keeping a connection to Michigan State. I wish I could spend more time down there and get down there more often. It's hard, and love it down there. And I love hearing all the programs going on, and anything related to entrepreneurship and the Hatchcast and Aaron, and he was great. And I was excited to visit with students and just hearing what you're up to. And I don't know, just keep getting after it. I get excited.
Yeah, beautiful. Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Everyone, make sure you go check out Fresh Coast and Upper Peninsula Supply Co. if you haven't already.
I got paid today, so I think there's a flannel on board.
Yeah, we'll post some links too.
Thank you so much, everybody. It's been an immense pleasure. And everybody stay healthy, still stay safe, and stay positive.
Wash your hands.
We'll get through this together. Wash your hands, damn it. All the peace and love. Thank you so much for this. It's been an immense privilege. And go green.
Hey, yeah, take care. Go white.
Thank you guys so much. We look forward to seeing you very soon. Stay safe, stay healthy, and if you love this episode of the Hatchcast, please take a moment to like, subscribe, and share. We are always open to commentary, and we're always open to your critiques, and we want to keep producing content that is incredibly meaningful to you. You can reach us at hatchcastpodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to hatchcast.buzzsprout.com and you can share the Hatchcast with all your friends. It doesn't matter what platform they're listening to us on. They can find us right there. Again, hatchcast.buzzsprout.com. Thank you so much, everybody. And we'll see you soon. Stay safe.
This episode of the Hatchcast is brought to you by the MSU Entrepreneurship Association. The MSUEA is a registered student organization open to all majors who are passionate about entrepreneurship. Find out more at msuea.org.
The Hatchcast is sponsored in part by Spartan Innovations. Spartan Innovations provides startups spinning out of MSU's ecosystem the commercialization, support, and financial resources necessary to turn MSU research technologies into successful Michigan businesses.
Hatchcast was created by me, Aaron Richard, and is produced by the Bridges Institute for Entrepreneurship in cooperation with the MSU Foundation. Gabe Hales is our editor and sound designer. Our co-producers and writers include Gabe Hales, Brandon Weaver, and myself. Original music and sound is created by Katya Gaudina, with help from Aubrey Haas, Brandon Weaver, Caitlin Setter, Sydney Owinga, Kurt Krieger, Tyler Mihai, Gabriella Allam, Jeff Smith, Paul Jakes, Ken Smuziak, Desiree Melfi, Neil Kane, and Laurie Fisher. Thank you.